Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This episode is brought to you by... No, I'm just kidding. How we doing, dude? What's going on? This is not a zen. This is a damn nicotine lozenge. You see what I mean? No microplastics for you, boy. I'm wearing headphones again. Just kind of felt like it today, you know. It's a lot. It comes at you fast, but sometimes you just got to make sure the sound's rolling. This is a beautiful day here. We got episode 45. And you might be seeing this on Thanksgiving. If you do, happy Thanksgiving. It's a hell of a holiday, even if you don't really like your family. You know what I'm saying? You still get to eat. You still get to take them damn afternoon walks. You feel me? Come back with some damn red eyes, and then your mama looks at you and you said, "Why you smell like herb?" You know, those kind of walks. Why you smell like pot? You smell like pot. You know, those kind of walks with your cousin. I ain't getting to hang out with none of my cousins this year. My family came out to AZ this year. So, damn, boy. Come on, dog. Yeah, man. We're just kind of playing around a little bit. I got some stuff I want to show you. We might not. We might just go with it. You know what I mean? Like a damn frog on a lily pad flowing downstream, something like that. You know, I don't think lily pads exist on rivers because they don't. You know what I mean? What's going on, y'all? I mean, here's the thing. I got this damn book in front of me, 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss. picked it up at my parents' Airbnb, sitting there on the damn bookshelf, and I really like Tim Ferriss's work, so thought to myself, well, I might just snag it and take it overnight. And it had a really interesting section about sleep, and you know, I struggle with sleep, and not in the way you might think. I struggle to get to bed when I say I'm going to get to bed. I sleep good. I don't have a problem falling asleep most of the time. I've actually had some problems falling asleep lately, like two nights, you know, not a lot, but I think it was because I ate some cookies and played video games. You know, it's funny. You think back to like being a prepubescent 12, 13-year-old boy. You know, a little bit of sweet music in your armpits. A little bit of pre-existential angst. You know, you think you got existential angst, but, you know, you got no clue what's coming, boy. You got no clue. Like, that kind of age. You used to be able to eat sweets and play video games until 3 a.m. and then wake up at 7 a.m. in the summertime to go to football camp. And it was all gravy, you know. Still out there routing folks up. Still out there getting the ankles broken in coverage and getting back up for another play, you know. But, yeah, man, the sleep is hard for me because I'll go to bed later than I say I will. And then that means I normally wake up later than I want to. And then that turns into feeling rushed in the morning, which turns into feeling rushed the whole day. So I've been trying to just really figure that out. Is it a question of self-respect? Is it biological needs? Is it not enough structure? I haven't really, it could be all of them. You know what I'm saying? It could be all of them at one time. Might not be any one or two particular things, but this 4-hour body by Tim Ferriss, I really appreciate Tim Ferriss's work. Started with the 4-hour work week. It's talking about ways you can start your own business, pretty much. I haven't listened to that audiobook in a long time. And that was like his first bestseller. That was like his come to Jesus, I'm famous type of moment, you know, when everyone was like, oh shit, this guy's a guy, you know. And then I think after that, he wrote this book, 4-Hour Body, and he's written a couple more that are really good. And I hadn't read any part of 4-Hour Body yet. It was the last one of his. He's got a couple others. 4-Hour Body was the last one I hadn't laid eyes within, you know. And man, I thought I turned on D&D, man. What are we doing? No, man, 4-Hour Body, it talks about, I spent some time on it last night, and it talks a lot about different workouts, obviously, different foods, supplements, and his whole thing in this book is that I'm not a medical professional, so I don't have to put my reputation or my life's work on the line. You know what I mean? Like, if a Stanford professor came out and said, hey, you only, God damn, son, stop. Damn. Sorry, I had a little, oh my God, I had a little meltdown. I ain't gonna cut it. I'm just gonna keep it rolling. Shit fire. Okay, where were we? Where were we? I got the alert shut off. So basically I guess the value in this, they call this man Tim Ferriss, they call him the human guinea pig. This guy, he's recorded every workout he's done since he was 18. And he's tried a bunch of other crazy shit. And basically he's saying this 4-hour body, this book is a composition of everything that I've tried and everything that my friends have tried that might work for you. And these are things that a Stanford professor or a leading scientist in a field, they can't really cover it because it's too controversial. There's too much risk. And it kind of made me think. I was like, damn. If anything outside of, like, if somebody in an industry that's pretty set in stone, I'm thinking the science community, I'm thinking the finance community, I'm thinking any type of field with conventional practices, you can't really go into those fields and be a revolutionary because your reputation goes on the line. Maybe you could get sued or blackballed or anything bad. And so when somebody that's kind of got some fresh ideas comes to the table and they can't present the fresh ideas because they fear they're going to lose their spot in the field and therefore lose their well-being, but their living and in a lot of cases their life's work. You can't bring anything new to the table. You just kind of got to do what people have told you need to do for a long, long time. And the downfall with that is that things change. Things progress. And so I'm at a phase of life where I'm thinking, okay, how much of what's around us is a construct that is not backed by reason in any way? It's just what the people before you told you to do, and that's what the people before them told them to do, and that's what the people before them told them to do. And it's like when you bring an idea to the table that might conflict with any of those generational ideas or constructs, it's like you damn kicked their freaking puppy, dude. if you're talking to someone that's deeply conditioned, you know what I'm saying? Deeply bought in. I was watching this documentary. I don't know if it's if you'd call it a series or a documentary or what, but it's on YouTube. It's a guy named Mike Maloney. Let me put y'all on game. And he was talking. It's like I'm not even done with the series yet. It's like 10, 30 minute episodes. It's like a TV series on YouTube, you know? And he was talking about the difference between currency and money. And I'm thinking to myself, when I started this, I was like, I don't know the difference. I'm a damn advisor. You know what I mean? What's the difference? They basically have all of the same qualities up until the very last item in the money section. So currency's got this list of things, right? It's fungible, or, it's, what are we doing? It's fun, you know, money's fungible. I can't remember many of the other things. But if you showed me a list, I'd remember. But what I do remember is the difference between currency and money is that money is a store of value. Currency is not. So what does that mean? A store of value is something that remains valuable forever. And the argument that is made, it's not really an argument, it's factual the deeper you go into it. The argument that's made, or the facts that are presented, are that the U.S. dollar ain't based on nothing. It's a piece of paper printed by our government. I don't know about y'all, but do we trust the government? I sound like a damn tin head. But for real, it's really interesting. There's something called the I guess it's like the Bretton Woods Act, or like Bretton Woods Pact, or the Bretton Woods Tract. I don't know. Bretton Woods SAC. Yeah. My damn brother's in the kitchen slamming every damn microwave door that there is. And I'm hearing it, and it's you know, it's throwing me into a damn. But I'm just gonna keep it flowing. We're in the thick of it now. Okay. Bretton Woods. Basically, what happened was, in World War I, all of the other European countries were fighting. Okay, so the U.S. stayed out of it basically until the end. And so how did we benefit from that? Well, gold was still the predominant currency in the world at that time. I believe it was in like the 30s, 40s, late 30s, 40s. So what happened is that all these European countries, they needed artillery. They needed all the things you need for war that you got to pay for. And so who supplied them? The U.S. This is how America came to be the world superpower. All these European countries were fighting each other in World War I, and they needed goods from the United States in order to go to war. And so what happened? Well, the United States exported all these goods so that these countries could fight each other, and we got a bunch of gold. And gold is inherently a store of value. Why? Because the only way, you can't print gold. You can't create gold, real gold, right? Same thing with silver. With gold, the way you get gold is that a supernova star explodes. And everything comes down onto all the metal particles, the gold particles that come down into the earth. So there's a finite supply of it. Think about economics 101, supply and demand. There's a finite supply of it, so that makes it inherently valuable. You can't make more. And so you saw this happen back in Athens, Greece, in the ancient times, the BC times, maybe like 600 something BC. Athens, Greece was a damn superpower because they were one of the first communities to use gold as currency. There are a lot of things you could use as currency. You could use oil as currency, but the problem with oil as currency is that you're not going to carry a barrel of oil to the supermarket. You know, how many pounds is a barrel of oil? I don't even know, but you think about carrying it on your fucking back, trying to go to Home Depot. Doesn't work. So the thing with gold that you could do is that you could take a set amount of it, however much it takes to make a coin, and you could exchange, it's interchangeable, So you could hand somebody a piece of gold for a fish at the market and go on your way knowing that the fisherman can take that same piece of gold and go to someone else and buy a damn fishing pole. And then that person can take that same piece of gold and take it and go buy taters or whatever. So, where was I going with that? Athens, Greece. So the thing that happened with Athens, Greece is that they started spending money on beautiful architecture. When their community really came into its own, started doing well, they started spending a bunch of money on architecture. They had to go to war with Sparta. That was the big one. So when that happened, they started overspending their gold. And so what did they do to tailor that or fix that situation? Well, they would melt down the gold, they would melt down some copper, and now you got, instead of 1,000 gold coins, you got 2,000 coins with gold and copper in it. So what does that do? That inherently debases the currency. It makes it less valuable. What you used to be able to, 1,000, basically, I'm trying to make sense of this in my head so that I can communicate it simply, like it's inflation. Because what you could get with 1,000 coins, you now have to get with 2,000 coins because each coin is inherently less valuable because there's less gold in it and more copper. So what happened? Athens, Greece ended up not being a superpower anymore. They ended up being a satellite of Rome. And if you know anything about money, which I'm sure most of you watching this do, sounds pretty damn familiar, doesn't it? U.S. Loves, it's the fancy term for printing more money is called quantitative easing. And the government, the financial industry, like all these different sectors, they want to confuse you with terms like that. They want to make terms like that sound really sophisticated and convoluted and make you think that it's like a good thing, right? Quantitative easing is just printing more money. So what can we make of this? Well, back during the Bretton Woods Act, or the Bretton Woods, I don't even know what you would call it. Let's see. This is a monetary system. Damn, we're already at 25 minutes. And I could probably do a 2-hour episode on this. The U.S. dollar still is the world reserve currency. So every currency in the world is valued based on the dollar. Okay, so for a long time, the dollar was anchored by the value of gold. Basically, a dollar was a note to get gold at the bank. A Federal Reserve note. And you could take your dollars in and you could redeem it for gold. It's not that way anymore. But during Bretton Woods, it was a period of time where the U.S. started to have to the U.S. started printing more dollars than there was gold. And countries like France called us out and they said, hey, you got more dollars than gold. Like, we want our gold back. So the U.S. at the end of World War I had like 2/3 of the world's gold. And then we had to give a bunch of it back. And it got to a point in 1971 where a lot of y'all might know about this, where Richard Nixon went on the airwaves and he said, we're not going to be on the gold standard anymore. Because what would have happened if we stayed on the gold standard is that all the countries would ask for gold in exchange for their currency. And the U.S. would have had all these notes to exchange for gold and no gold. And the whole world financial system was based on the U.S. dollar, which was based on gold. And the U.S. didn't have any gold to exchange for the Federal Reserve note. And so the whole world financial system would have crashed if Nixon didn't take us off the gold standard. And so where does that leave us? Well, the dollar's not tied to anything. The government can just print it, and you got to trust the government. The interesting thing about it is that when a currency is not tied to anything, when its value isn't anchored by anything that's real money, right? A store of value like gold. It's called a fiat currency. And the thing about fiat currencies is that there has not been a single fiat currency in the history of the world, in the history of humankind, that has been recorded that did not fail. So what does that mean? Number one, stop trading Forex, foreign exchange currencies. Stop doing that. Second is, what if you spend your whole life saving dollars? Which is what we're all told to do. It's what I tell people to do in my job. I'm not saying we're going to have doomsday tomorrow. I'm not saying we're going to have a, you know, free for all. But you got to think about what history's told us. You got to think about what history's told us. Not a single, the dollar is a fiat currency, F-I-A-T. Not a single fiat currency in human history has made it. So maybe we'll talk more about that. Make it that way, you will. I don't know. It's just something that was sitting on my brain a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So what do we got? This is a picture I took from the 4-hour body. It was really interesting to me. So there's, I guess, 2, 4, 6 different ways to sleep. There's monophasic sleep, which is what everybody does, 8 hours a night. But then there's different ways to sleep. And, you know, Tim Ferriss says at the beginning of this 4-hour body book, this book is a buffet, meaning it's not meant to be consumed cover to cover. Pick what you want. And so he kind of classified, like, hey, if this is what you're looking for, read these sections. And one of the sections that I was interested in is sleep. So we got monophasic sleep. There's 6 kinds of sleep. And basically the hook for this chapter was, is it possible to sleep 2 hours a night and feel refreshed and be able to function well? And and he said the answer is yes. And I was like, okay. And so this is the, I hope my editor keeps this up here. This is the different kinds of sleep. And so basically the idea behind it is you can get away with sleeping less during the night if you take 20-hour naps during the day. And the less sleep you get at night, the more 20-minute naps you need per day, and the more regimented you have to be on your schedule with when you take these 20-minute naps. And you can't oversleep on these 20-minute naps either. It'll upset the whole cycle and you'll be tired for, you know, 24 hours. But basically the severity of it increases as you go down the list here. So, like, you can get away with 6.5 hours, 6.3 hours if you take 1 20-minute nap during the day. And the idea with this is that these 20-minute naps, what you're doing is you're tricking your body into thinking that it's exhausted. And so when your mind thinks that it's exhausted, anytime you fall asleep, you go right into REM sleep, which is the most restorative kind of sleep, at least mentally. I don't know what this means for somebody that works out hard, that needs a lot of deep sleep to recuperate the body. I don't know. But, you know, on the first one, you got 6.3 hours, 120 minute nap. The second one, you got 5.2 hours at night, 220 minute naps. Third one, you got 4 hours, 320 minute naps. The fifth one is 2.8 total hours. You take 420 minute naps. And then the Uberman is the most severe form of this. The Uberman is no sleep at night other than your 20 minute naps, and it's just on a 24 hour cycle. You take 2, 4, 6 20 minute naps, and it has to be fully regimented. The author prefaces the chapter with, "I don't recommend Uberman unless you're trying to meet an emergency deadline." So that's probably not the way, like, you know, I still don't know if I'm interested in trying this yet because of my training, because of, you know, basically that's the main thing. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, if you work out hard, like, how effective is this? Like, it sounds like the mental side you could get away with, you know, mental rest, because your body's going into REM sleep for 20 minutes automatically first thing. But the deep sleep, I'm not sure if you get it. And I'm pretty sure you need deep sleep to repair tissue in your body. So I don't know. Maybe I'll give one of these a try. Maybe the first one, the siesta, the one nap, the 120 minute nap. And I hope I'm doing a good job of explaining this. But basically, you know, you can get away with 1.7 less hours of sleep at night if you just take one 20-minute nap on schedule during the day. And then the farther down you want to take your sleep at night, the more 20-minute naps you got to take and the more regimented you got to be with your schedule. So I don't know. It's cool. It's called polyphasic sleep. A lot of, like, startup entrepreneurs and stuff talk about it in this chapter. I thought it was interesting. I hope I did a decent job kind of explaining it. I just read this last night, so trying to get a decent understanding of it myself. All right. I think we got some clips of the week. We do. Let's go ahead and show those now. This is an oldie but a goodie. And I don't think it'll trigger copyright because this isn't the actual song. It's a guy playing the song.
Having trouble trying to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm counting sheep but running out.
Run it up.
It's time to buy. Still I try.
Yeah.
No rest for cross stops in my mind.
Yes. Let's
go. On my own, here we go.
Ooh. This gonna get them hoes wet, I'm telling you. Yeah. Hey.
My eyes feel like they're gonna bleed.
Yeah, they bleeding, bitch. Yeah.
Right up and bulging out my skull.
Come on now.
My mouth is dry.
Is that a Green Day song? I don't know. That's the shit that MLK died for right there, baby. Right there. It's cultural assimilation. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know what that's like. Seems like it was just a drunken night on the town for the boys and, just ran into a skinny white dude strumming the guitar, pulled out his phone, picks up Snapchat. I noticed a couple of lapses in that video there. It seemed like it was every 10 seconds, a little Snapchat production. You know what I mean? I don't have Snapchat on my phone anymore, man. You go to the damn homepage on Snapchat, and it's just time waster after time waster. It's like David Dobrik and the Hawk Tuh girl, like, and Jake Paul, and like, dude, it's like the Snapchat homepage is like the pinnacle of clickbait. You know, it's stuff that for some reason, I don't know what it is in our lizard brains that makes us, at least for me, like there's, you go on the Snapchat homepage and you see something and you're like, I know that's going to waste my time. I'm still going to watch it. I think it's dangerous as hell. It's dangerous, at least for me. So I got rid of it because I was like, dude, I'm sitting here getting ready to get in the cold plunge. And I don't want to do it, so I'm putting it off. And I just find myself in my phone going through these like Island Boys Snapchat story. It's like, dude, it's like, stop. It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's a complete waste of time. So I got rid of it. Didn't want to get in trouble. I'm like, girl, he's all that. But I mean, that looked like a Snapchat production. So a rare non-waste of time on Snapchat, maybe. I don't know. What's the next deal? Okay. So this guy I'm about to show y'all, he had a complete and utter meltdown. I would imagine it's a, it's a National Press Club. So it's Legacy Media. This is a bit of a skinhead, tin metal, cone hat episode here today. This is a Legacy Media. This guy has a complete meltdown over Elon Musk saying that the people are the media. He's a complete meltdown. And his problem with it is that he knows that his life's work is starting to not be of value anymore. That's why he's having a meltdown. Here it is.
Everything we do is under fire. Elon Musk sits on Twitter every day or X today saying, like, we are the media. You are the media. My message to Elon Musk is bullshit. You're not the media. You having...
Why not?
You having a blue check mark, a Twitter handle, and 300 words of cleverness doesn't make you a reporter. You don't do that by popping off on Twitter. You don't do that by having an opinion. You do it by doing the hard work.
Yeah, come on, slow clap, everybody. Whoa.
First of all,
I've got to say, extraordinary content. It needed to be said.
Yeah.
It continues to need to be said. When of the garbage is flying around on social media, lying about reporters, lying about the hard work they do, lying about the hard work editors do, lying about everything up and down, about not only their alternative set of facts, but alternative set of facts about what people like you do. And, or if social media, people lying every day, every hour, every minute about the news. What you do matters. What the New York Times does matters. What the Wall Street Journal does matters. What Jonathan Lemire does matters. What the Financial Times does matters. What NBC News and MSNBC reporters do matters. It matters.
I just made fun of Jake Paul in the last segment, and I realized I'm wearing... This is from the Sugar Shop right here. It's got Team Sugar Shane on the back, so don't have anything against Jake Paul. I'm just saying that some of the stuff is a waste of time on Snapchat. That's all I'm saying. But this guy had a complete meltdown about the media, about the about Elon saying you are the media. Why do you as a media executive feel like you have more of a right to talk about things that are going on than the actual people amongst the events that are going on? Why does he have such an emotional overtone when he's saying these things? If he was sure of what he was saying, he probably would have been a bit more emotionally even given that speech, wouldn't he? Why denigrate the people in saying that you're not the media? I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, media is a, I guess it's a derivative word of medium, a means of exchange, right? This event happens here. A person's there witnessing the event. And so they have a medium to report on that event and say, hey, this event might be interesting for other people to know about. Wouldn't the people be the best reporters there are? It's not our fault that folks that otherwise don't add any other value to society other than looking a certain way and sounding a certain way and being able to professionally do so, like, what's the difference other than those skills? What's the difference? It's basically telling me, like, hey, you're not in media. You're not in media. Yeah, the hell I am. I don't know. I thought I'd have better roasts there, but, you know, that's kind of just what comes to mind. Okay, we got the next deal. Texas mascot looks to have taken some methamphetamine before the game here. Check this out. Look at this guy. I'm going to run it one more time for my editor. Look at this guy. How do you move that fast? Oh, shit, man. You think about a mascot. Okay. You think about a let's say a professional sports mascot. I got to know one guy that was the mascot for the Colts. And I don't want to dox him. His name's Trey. He's a good dude. I'm pretty sure he's still there. And he would come into our team's little room and ask us if we wanted to make TikToks for the Colts mascot's named Blue. So he wanted us to help him make TikToks for the Blue account. And he's a hell of a guy, man. Worked his ass off. Interesting dude to talk to, you know. But I know Trey isn't. I know he's not this type of guy, and it probably is a craft. I know it is a craft to be a mascot, especially in the NFL. It's a full time job. But I can't help but think, like, it's, you know, you think back to, like, the TV series. I forget. It's like some show or some movie. And this guy's like walking around. He's got like a job at a water park. He's like walking around as the mascot of the water park. And the guy like blows chunks in his suit because he's like so fucked up, you know, like intoxicated on something. I don't know, man. It's something to think about. Like, because nobody can see your eyes, you know. Nobody can really, I mean, unless you're stumbling around, you probably couldn't be drunk. But, like, that Texans mascot right there, that's real. I don't see any reason for that to be altered or, you know, whatever else, AI. I don't see the opportunity. I'm just freaking talking, man. It's been a week already. Yeah, man. You know, like, you're a mascot and have a little smoky smoke before the game. The fella I knew never did stuff like that, but it's interesting. Oh man, I'm losing steam. Come on, bro. This one might bring me
right here at the block with the homies. What's up, boo?
Hey, what's happening?
Chop in with us. Where the bitches at, though? Yes, sir. We trying to kick it.
No bitches, bro. I told you this.
Why not?
Bro, my girl got you on there. I told you that.
Wait, so why haven't you blocked her from?
I blocked her already on my phone, but I can't do that on your account, bro.
What?
She sees everything you post.
Oh.
Remember that last time you was mentioning bitches?
Uh-huh.
I didn't get in a fade, bro. She blacked my eye.
Oh, the homegirl abusive.
Yeah, bro, abusive.
The homegirl domestic violence.
Yes, bro.
But fool, but your horse will be my horse, and my horse will be your horse.
We don't have no horse if we both dead, bro. How the fuck we gonna play that role if we both dead?
Oh, she trying to 187 type shit?
Bro, double homicide, yes.
Murder was the case?
Murder was the case.
The homegirl dead, bro. But then just leave her, fool. She's probably weird, fool. She's a weirdo, fool.
It's like I'm addicted to this shit. I don't know, I can't explain it to you, bro.
You're addicted to bitches punching you in the face?
It's easier said than done, bro. I don't know, bro.
Why are you scared of her?
Bro, you
look at your face. You look scared.
Easier said than done. Domestic violence. Murder, what the case? That's definitely California Mexicans, too. I know the lingo, dude. I know the dialect. Just leave her, fool. She's probably weird, fool. That's, dude, I played some. I ended up linking with a couple Mexicans on a golf course on Saturday night, I think. And, bro, it's good-ass entertainment. They were pissing me off low-key because it was a group of two guys, and they were in front of me, and they just weren't letting me play through, man. They were two or three holes. They just were taking time and not letting me play through. And I finally pulled up on them. I was like, you guys trying to let me play through and finish? They were like, yeah, fool. A couple Mexican dudes. Yeah, fool. And I hit the ball, and I was like, all right, boys, I'm going to try and finish this up. I'll see you. And one of them was like, no, fool, let me hit. I'm going to hit it too, fool. I was like, okay, you trying to bull? I was like, I guess I'll bull. And we played, man. And one of them, low-key, like, I was wearing like a Red Hawk shirt or something from the gym. No, I was wearing a UFC. I was wearing this UFC hat. And they're like, you fight, fool? And I was like, no, I just like to train with fighters. And they were like, oh. And one of them was like, they're both cool, but one of them was like, you know, they were cousins. And one of them was definitely like the younger cousin. And the other one was definitely like the, oh yeah, like I'm the alpha of the group type shit, and the younger cousin was like, hey, so you fight? And I told him, you know, what I told y'all, and then the other guy was like, he's like, I'm not too impressed, and he's like, like thinking I would be weak at it. I was kind of, you know, just didn't react, like whatever. And then we get to the next tee box, and the younger cousin, he was like, he's like, so fool, like what you guys do when you go in there and train? And I was like, well, you know, we throw hands on Tuesdays, we wrestle on Thursdays, we spar on Saturdays, put it all together. And the older one, like, it wasn't nothing like crazy, but he was standing next to me, and he like level changed on me, like see if I would react. And I didn't. They're like, oh, he got it, fool. It was just funny. And then after that, the older cousin, he didn't make no more comments. He didn't do no more level changes, try to get me to flinch, like nothing. We was just cool. And then he actually gave me, you know, it got dark and they wanted to keep playing. So he actually, you know, he gave me a glow in the dark ball that he said he spent $8 a ball on. And I thought that was real nice. You know, it's a good feeling as a man when another fella's trying to bust your chops and you kind of roll with it and you kind of earn their respect. You know, I think that's important for men. You got to kind of have that chop buster in the group that kind of weeds out the, I don't want to say the soft fellas, but the emotional, the more emotionally frail fellas, you know what I'm saying? Because if I was insecure, I probably would have flared up the second he said, "Oh, I don't buy it." You know, I don't see it or whatever the hell he said. But I don't know. It was cool. You know, the video of those Mexicans reminded me of that. Mexican people are cool, man. Mexican people are some of my favorite people. You know, they're gritty. They work hard. They don't judge you. You know, they got good food. Good at baseball. Not very tall, but cool people. You know what I'm saying? What we got next, man? We're at about 55 minutes. We're making good time. Okay. So Alabama got... We didn't talk about much football today, fellas. I'm sorry about that. But just had other stuff on my mind. It's kind of hard to, like, be into football when your team's a dumpster fire. You know, I actually saw a dumpster fire this week, a real one, outside of the gym. And it was after training, and we went outside, and it was just a big-ass dumpster, like, raging fire. I don't know who did it. Somebody did it. You know what I mean? But the Bengals are a dumpster fire, so it's like I just don't get much in, like, it's hard for me to want to follow the sport closely. And of course, this is still, you know, this is still a football show. I just like other things, you know what I'm saying? But this is a football clip. This is every Jalen Milroe run against Oklahoma. Alabama got their ass beat against Oklahoma last week. And this is just an interesting clip. Oklahoma's 5-5. Alabama's 8-2, man. And Oklahoma just smoked them. Check this out. He's completely silent, so we'll be able to commentate. So you got he does a bunch of these draws right here. There's one. And he gets freaking licked on that first play, and I feel like that changed the whole narrative of this game for Jalen Milroe. It's a little read option. He keeps it. It's a good gain. You got the first down. You plow forward. He goes sideways. I feel like that first hit really affected the amount of contact he wanted to absorb after that. Because when you get licked one good time, it's like, okay. Like, early in the game, it's like, it gets in your head. Here's another draw. And he just, bro, like, just laid down. You know what I'm saying? I think this is probably the same play. Look at this. All right. Dude, he didn't want to get hit. And I think 40 was the one that licked him on that first play. I would have seen that first play if I was Kalen DeBoer. I mean, I don't know, man. Jalen Milroe is such a great player most of the time. And the DN crashes, so he pulled it. But you got you a gap right there. You got to hit it. But then again, he's thinking about getting the ear hold again. He's got the speed to hit that gap and get more. Another draw. Nice spin. And he goes backwards. I think that first play really set the tone. You get punched in the mouth. That was a good run. You know, it's all about the ability to mentally just come back to baseline. And it's hard in the heat of competition like this. A little read option. We're not really anywhere to go on that play. We got another draw with some window dressing, and they had that bottled up from the very start. We're scrambling. I mean, I get as a quarterback, you're trying to protect yourself. I get that. I'm not going to tell you to lower your shoulder every play. That one's bottled up again. A lot of these plays were just and this is my first time watching this film all the way through of every Jalen Milroe run. It's a good gain. Oh my God, these boys were hitting, dude. These boys were hitting. Bottled up again. 40 was having himself a hell of a game for Oklahoma. This is it, you know. I think a lot of SEC supremacists don't want to admit Texas and Oklahoma just yet. I think some of them will have to admit that these are good programs as well. I mean, myself included, I'm definitely an SEC supremacist. And I was like, damn, dude, I ain't admitting Oklahoma and Texas into the SEC until they get them some signature wins in this conference. You know what I'm saying? They got to get initiated. They got to get baptized. You know what I'm saying? And Oklahoma did the baptizing to Alabama. And I think it was, you know, I didn't watch the whole game. That's really the gist of the film that I've seen that we just showed here on the pod. But it looks like Bama got embarrassed by Oklahoma. And I think that we have to acknowledge Oklahoma is a real SEC program now. I think the baptism has occurred. Okay. That's it for the episode. This is episode 45 in the jar with your boy Dupe. Hit a like button if you enjoyed it. Leave a comment. Let us know what you want us to talk about. I know there's people out there watching this show. It might not be many. But nonetheless, leave a comment. Let us know. And definitely hit that subscribe button. It takes a millisecond. You know what I'm saying? Helps us out tremendously. Okay, I love you guys. We'll see y'all next week. This is In the Jar.